Here's to good friends.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Hmm. Sort of an oaky
aftertaste.
Mm. What was that?
She did tell me to get a beer and some cheese fries over at Eskimo Joe's.
Yeah! That's very nice, lovely. I only hope you feel this way when I'm done. Because I could destroy this night in 2 seconds.
In 2 seconds?
Why is that funny?
Well, I think it's a bit funny to be trying to define nothing.
Nothing.
Smooth as a bourbon on a summer day. Strong as a peated scotch in the winter night. This is a fair warning. The Catholic Man Show is about to begin.
Slap some bacon on a biscuit and let's go!
We're burning daylight!
Excellent one. Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. It seems that this is a very fitting episode, being that it's the last one recorded in studio.
With studs.
The studs in the studio.
Yes. We have El Producer Juan Posada in the house.
This is the Swan Song.
The Swan Song.
The Swan Song.
Of the, being in the studio.
So, you guys have wanted him. Like, whenever Adam and I travel, the questions we get the most are like, always
is Juan a real person?
Like, they're always about Juan and Jim. Everybody wants to know about, like, Juan and Jim. Like, are they here with you? And when if the answer is no, it's like...
Which is always, basically.
Well, no, yeah, like, lately. Oh, Jim wants to take a picture.
Okay.
Okay, cheese. Do I have ribs in my teeth? Cheese.
It's like a peek.
Cheeps.
It's nice. Like a peek behind the veil.
A peek behind the veil.
Yeah, Jim and I are behind the veil.
A very small veil.
No, we didn't have a big veil.
It's a big veil.
It's a big veil.
It's a very big veil.
What, do you guys think you're like a little tiny Mary or something?
But Juan is real.
Here he is. This is him.
Yes.
In all my glory.
Go watch the YouTube video.
And I'm going to have a tan today because otherwise it would be embarrassing.
And so we thought it would be good to have an episode with Juan on the last one that we're recording in studio. Juan is obviously, as people have known who followed us throughout the years, Juan has played a instrumental role in the growth of the Catholic Man Show. You know, he first started out as just a avid supporter, and like he started out just telling everybody in the Tulsa market about our show, which we were very grateful for because that kind of got us going. And then like he came to us and was like, hey, I just want to, like, how else can I help? And at the time it was, we were shipping all of our stuff and we're like, hey, can you just start shipping things for us? And he was I think he regretted probably asking how he could help.
Dude, I forgot that you used to ship our stuff.
Yeah
except that I was way worse than Jim. I would do it like once every 2 months. And have like 43 boxes going on at the same time.
Yeah. And then Jim was gracious enough to take that over. And so then we were like, well, Juan, we're starting our video side. Can you help us with the producing? So he started helping produce. And then like he started going on even speaking engagements with us. He was huge part in the Catholic Man Show camp out because he like was cooking for us.
That's my favorite part of the whole service.
So like this is just a
the camp out is awesome.
This is obviously not rehearsed or we hadn't talked about like what we're gonna actually discuss, but this is just a moment to say, Juan, Dave and I are incredibly grateful for all the many hours that you put into the show. Like the thing is like you were always here to produce every week while we were recording, which is a huge commitment, right? You know, to be like willing to say, yeah, I want to help. I'll just sit here every week and listen to you guys just talk about ridiculous things. So I'm incredibly grateful for you. I know Dave is as well.
Mostly
Dave. And I think that we couldn't say that the way we have got, like the way we have grown on the podcast and on the radio, like it was obviously because of the instrumental parts that you played, that Jim has played, like that like we've had like kind of this group.
The team.
And so like I'm just incredibly grateful, man. Like you've obviously you're our best friend, but like on top of that, like you've kind of gone the extra mile. So
you're so welcome, man. It was such a joy. Like every time I put something that has Catholic Mitchell merch on, I feel like I'm putting like a team jersey, you know, of a elite team that I belong. So I'm extremely thankful for the opportunity to even, you know, be a part of all this.
So Juan, I wanted to ask you,
can we talk about the whiskey first and then you can ask?
Yes.
I've been waiting.
Did you try it? No, I tried it. Oh, I tried it.
Because I have decorum.
I tried it.
Yeah.
Respect for tradition much.
Yes. Okay. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
Cheers to Jesus.
So we're drinking a product of Kolila. This is a Scotch Malt Whiskey Society bottle. Oh. It's a 10-year-old Kolila. It's finished in refill ex-bourbon hogsheads. Mm. Once again, I don't know what they do to make the whiskey so good. But like, this is extra smoky. It's just
balanced too.
It's amazing.
It's incredible for how smoky it is, how balanced it is.
Just this is not going to register well on the gym scale, the yummy scale of it. I
think it's going to be less yummy.
It doesn't fit on the yummy scale. It's not worthy. The yummy scale is not.
I think we have a sugar cube we could put in it, Jim.
Maple syrup.
You want a sugar cube?
That stands on its own without the yummy scale.
So do you like it?
Yes.
You do.
Oh, you like it. Oh, based off.
So it's like a higher scale above the yummy scale.
Yeah, it just.
I misinterpreted what you were saying.
Jim, I'm so proud to see you grow through the years.
Commercially made scotches, but this is somebody's hard work right here.
You know, that is true. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society really is. It's like, this is not a commercial for them. I'm just a big fan of everything.
We just want
you to
sponsor our show.
Please sponsor us. but everything they make is boutique. I don't know if it's boutique. That's something else. It's bespoke.
Mm.
It's bespoke as all get out.
I don't know what bespoke means, but I'm sure that is.
Bespoke is like handcrafted, unique, like custom.
Okay, like my food.
Yeah.
Much like
that. Yeah, bro. Now
I have another word to describe my food.
Like your kitchen.
This is a bespoke piece of meat. But no, what I really like about, you know, is sometimes easier to have like a strong note and enjoy that note, like a Lafroy, right? You have a bunch of peat in there and you love that, but to get the complexity right, sometimes is a hit or miss. It's like the smoke and the peat in this is not really matching up. This is very well balanced.
So if you're a member,
what's your favorite?
It's called Doesn't Hold Back,
which is very fitting.
Yeah. Just like
is
me.
It doesn't. Yeah, bro. Just like
that's
you.
Why we picked this one.
Very apropos.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. Dave, what was your question? I'm sorry.
Well, I just wanted to, like, since this episode is about Juan, share a little bit of, and invite Juan to share a little bit about your own faith.
Okay.
Because over the course of our friendship, I have watched you change a lot. I mean, we all have.
And not just haircuts and facial hair.
I mean, you've made bad choices lately.
He does have the best mullet out of all of us.
Definitely, you have a. I mean, as far as mullets go,
that's a mane.
It is a mane.
Look at this.
I've heard it called Arkansas Waterfall as my favorite name for it.
Can I hear your best lion roar? Like, let me hear.
No. Here's the thing. It's not gonna happen.
Well, that surprises me. Surprises me.
Look at him just grow right in front
of
our eyes.
Right in front of us on the show. We're all this is
so prudent.
This is a moment of growth.
Yeah.
We have grown.
Look at this virtue.
We've seen Joe
manifest.
We've seen Jim grow in taste of scotch. I see him grow in virtue.
Wow.
I agree with that.
Well,
but I think to get
that
to
was
your,
a good show.
I think to get to your question like that is as what were you asking specifically?
Like, just tell us a little bit about your own faith journey. Over the last 10 years.
Okay, ooh.
Over the last 8 years.
I want to hear Catholic Mansion. Yeah. I want to hear how it is to be a Catholic in Venezuela too.
Okay.
Separate question.
Well,
because it's very hungry. It's like Lent all the time.
Yeah.
Less of opportunity for suffering.
So much holiness.
Yeah. Well, I think it's actually, you know, is similar to your guys' journey. It's been kind of hand in hand with the main show, just in as much as when we try to inculcate like the language of virtues in our life, that is something that is always fruitful. Even if we try and we failed, just identifying these paths take us to what the next level. And then even when you think you're really striving, then you get that humility slap and you're just like, oh man, I've been failing. But what the beautiful thing about the knowledge and the language of virtues is that all of a sudden it's not like a vagueness of failing. It's been like, hey, I've lacked in this and these virtues.
More clarity.
So we talk about virtues all the time. And that has been, in one word, like the growth in my prayer life and the growth in my faith is like identifying how much I suck in some of these things. And then through the gifts of growing them. And then, of course, you have the or growth as parents that are just really hand in hand with that growing in faith and growing in virtue. So,
sorry.
It's okay. That's what happens when you don't have a producer on the show.
I was going to remind you, but I was like, no, he probably did it. But you didn't.
But then, like, let's see. Ideas. So then you have, of course, you know, we did an episode on, like, the father wound. And mm-hmm. That was really, I really highly encourage you guys to go check that out.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And you want, when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So, for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world.
You know, we did an episode on, like, the father wound, and that was really... I really highly encourage you guys to go check that out, because I remember having a point where I realized, it's like, man, I'm really struggling with identifying God as the father, and putting a, like, having a veil lifted, I was like, oh, yeah, maybe that's why, you know, prayer doesn't come so flowingly out of my own imagination or whatever. And then through our growth in our lives and our growth in the show, I started to think of, like, you know that's back when the St. Joseph thing was
kind of like the consecration to St. Joseph,
consecration and just so, catching, like, fire, right? Yeah. And
which you should do. Everyone should do that.
No, that was for me like a huge healing.
I also got a tremendous amount of. I feel like I grew a lot spiritually during the consecration to St. Joseph.
So I would be, what's the one I'm looking for? Like, demised if I don't mention...
You would be remiss?
Remiss, yes. And demised, too.
Okay.
If I don't mention, like, how crucial...
I'm glad you're mentioning it, then. So you don't suffer a demise.
Yeah. Yes. How crucial he has been in this growth journey, kind of like identifying, oh, St. Joseph and his role as a spiritual father to me... All the virtues we have a part of the novena that we do very frequently. I think to sum up, let me sum up. It would be just the growth in virtue, and then finding those gaps where I can identify more clearly, and then ask for help in those very, very things.
I do think that the idea of a father wound is something that people, I think especially men, need to talk about more. Because the truth is, we all have a father wound. This is, it's part of the original sin that we, that has been passed on. This is what we inherit, is that Adam and Eve, and thus us, have this tendency of rejection of the of our father.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's really what they did, is that they had, Adam walked in the garden with the Lord, right? He knew God, and then he rejected him. And so we all have this paternal, like, inheritance that we have to overcome, and strive to heal in our own lives. So we all, we like, that's just something we all have, and I think it plays itself out especially in men.
Yeah, Juan, you have, being on the buttons over the years, so to speak, you've had a lot of interactions with the people who have been posting on our, you know, as we're talking on YouTube, like posting on social media. I'm curious on what your thoughts are on just the importance of a friendship and holiness within, like having a common ground in Jesus Christ in friendships. It seems like, as we've gone through, one of the common threads that's woven through each episode from feedback that we get are guys just saying, I just wish I had friends like you guys.
Yeah. I've heard it a lot too.
And so I'm just curious on, like, what's your thought on friendship? What is your thought on the importance of having holy friendships? And what have you seen just like from all of the experience that you've had on the show?
Well, I think that...
And how responsible do you think I am personally for you going to heaven?
Ooh.
Okay. We'll save that for later. We'll put a pin on that.
Yeah, we'll best for last. Yeah. Best for last.
So as far as... So with friendship, there's a sense of, like, vulnerability, mm-hmm. and intimacy, mm-hmm. that just develops with time. You can see it on like a very funny level when you have like inside jokes. Like, I remember the first time that we had our inside jokes, I just felt like I was finally like accepted into the clan. I was just like, oh man, you don't know what I'm talking about, but I do.
That's true.
And he does.
I mean, that is like a big thing.
So that's the first, like, on a natural level. But then you have like the fruits of that intimacy, which comes, you know, with accountability and calling each other out when something happens. So it goes hand in hand, like all the moments of fun that you have that you give thank God for, and then the tough moments where you are like talking about something important that just keep you accountable. But that wouldn't happen if you didn't have that intimacy and that vulnerability with one another. You could hear word for word what you're saying from somebody else, but it wouldn't wouldn't take it the same way. And then, of course, you have like the awesome exchange of ideas. I'm trying this out. Oh man, I'm gonna start doing that in my family and see if it lands. Sometimes it lands, sometimes it doesn't. But at least you get to have a way to grow in intentionality, because that's part of the journey, to see like, okay, what worked for him, what didn't. So to have that with you and experience it throughout the show has been a big blessing. But it almost also makes you want to realize, like, oh, you know, this friendship that I have with David and Adam is just awesome. And then you see like how much that's like a foresight of, well, the true friendship that you're called to have, which is with Jesus. And then you're just like, man, I talked with David and Adam like 4 hours this week.
Like, too much.
Like, how many hours did I spoke to Jesus, you know? Mm. And then like something happens in a friendship and you're just like a little bit rocked, and you're like, man, like and then you go to the source of that true friendship and you realize, it's like, man, how important is this to see all those aspects be complementary to one another. Mm. Because that is the friendship that we ultimately called to. So however we all approach our own ways, it's always good to see examples.
So when I think...
Did I answer your question?
Yeah.
I think one of your greatest strengths, aside from
your mustache.
The mustache is good. I feel like your mustache has been better.
Thank you.
In like times past.
Huh.
Like, are you like trimming it more now?
I made a mistake the other day trimming it, so I had to like have a soft restart on the sides.
Okay. But yeah. Okay.
It will get
it. It looks great.
Thank you.
But it's just not like the full Colombian like cocaine dealer.
Yeah.
Like that's not level there. That it has been, which I always appreciate. Not that I want to promote cocaine dealing, but I think
it wouldn't be prudent.
But the image of the like just a glorious mustache, you know. Mm.
Just keep going, Dave.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm just waiting to see how he tries to get out of that. But
you guys think I'm in a hole, and I'm exactly where I want to be. But I think one of your greatest strengths is your ability to take advice. Oh. Like, you more than anybody, like, sometimes we'll, like, talk about something, and then, like, I notice, like, wow, you're, like, actually putting, like, changing the way you do things and putting this conversation into practice. Mm. How do you do that? What's your secret for taking advice?
Well, for once, is like I go with Joan, my wife. I was like, well, they said that. What do you think about it? And she's like, I've been trying to tell you that all this time. So I was like,
she's like, thank God for Adam and David.
Like, hey, Juan, you know, I think you need like a little bit. You guys were like, I think you need a little bit more like order in your life. You know, like, get your house in order, take care of things. You know, maybe you're hosting too many parties. And I go to Joan, and I'm just like, so, babe, like.
So Adam and Dave said this
ridiculous.
It was like stupid
you,
thing.
You were going to laugh. You were going to laugh so hard when I tell you this. This is what they told me. Can you believe they even said this? Listen to this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I love community, and I love hosting. So at one point, I had asked Joan that we were going to host families twice a week.
Es mucho.
One-on-one, apart from the big parties.
Right.
Right.
All right.
And then every Saturday for everybody else.
Yes. So I think that's part of like the discernment is just like, man, this blind spot that just hits you. Then you realize it's like, oh, why don't you take it to prayer? So then that point is like obviously slap in the face.
I also can relate that very often the answer to my prayers come in the voice of my wife.
Mm.
Like she has been the voice of God for me many times. Like, wow.
Well, yeah. Well, I think
okay.
This can right tie back to the friendship because I remember David, you talked about like your vocation is not a vague concept of marriage out there that you're trying to fulfill. Like, your vocation is your wife. I remember sitting in that chair and it's like, man, I never heard it put that way. And that's when I finally started listening to my wife.
If David says so, I guess I will listen to what she says. Mm-hmm. I have been ignoring her for all these years. I don't even know what she says. I'll have to start listening. This is going to be kind of exciting.
Yeah. No, but yeah, it just takes it to that level of, again, I keep using the word intentionality because I think something we all drive about and we're specific. And I am somebody that thinks about so many things at the same time. And I can spend, you know, like I've thought about 8 different books I can write. I've written 0 books.
In Spanish.
In Spanish.
Obviously.
One is a that crossover.
Yeah, because it's better.
Obviously.
Yeah. It was a...
Well, for people who don't know, this has been recurring debate.
It's an inner joke.
It is. At this point, it has become a joke. There were moments when it was not a joke. But about whether or not Spanish is better than English.
Yeah.
I will still... we'll take it off.
No, we are not starting that right now.
Yeah, we're not going to. We're going to put another pin.
I have
two pins.
I have like come up with 2 different books myself that you should write.
Yeah,
you know, it's like Juan, you should do this.
Yeah, I started an essay that maybe is going to be part of the book. I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
And I started in my head.
Starting a book is the hardest part. That's why you should just start writing in the middle.
Mm.
Like, forget about the intro. Just like,
yeah, what's I totally agree.
The, like, the middle chapter. I start writing the middle chapter.
Whatever is on your mind that comes the easiest at that moment to write is what you write.
Yeah. Just put it on paper and then make it the editor's problem.
Yeah.
So when I was in my, so I came to Tulsa and I was 17 and I was in my English class.
And did you speak English?
I mean, I've watched a lot of Pokemon and played video games, so that's mostly how I learned English.
You knew, like, Pikachu?
No, I know a lot of verbs, right? Because they have, like, scratch, headbutt, you know, crosscut, all these other things. So, and I also watched some Friends. So, to bring back Friends, my dad was like, hey, do you want to go to school in Tulsa? And I'm like, oh, you mean, like, Chandler? Because Chandler talks about Tulsa like the Paris of Oklahoma.
Does?
And my dad was like, yeah.
He? Does he?
Yeah. He moved to Tulsa.
In the movie or in the show?
In the show he moved to Tulsa. Because he's gone from like the big city to
Is this before or after he was in the water fountain?
Just thinking of the intro. I don't think they ever got in a water fountain, actually, during the whole show. That was just part of the intro.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's the only part I saw.
I forgot where I was going with the...
But moving to Tulsa in English.
So we're talking about writing. And I'm in this like English writing class and you have to like, okay, they give you 20 minutes to write an essay. And then this guy from Angola sit next to me and is like...
Where is Angola?
Africa.
Okay.
Right. Not Mongolia.
No. Angola.
Totally other place.
So they speak Portuguese there. And then the teacher goes, all right, go. And I'm sitting there and I hear this guy next to me. He's like... Like, constantly. And then next
this
week...
This is writing on the computer.
On the
in
computer,
my mind,
typing.
For some reason, it was writing by hand, but you're typing on the
typing. Next week. All right, you have 10 minutes. Go. The guy... So when I developed some friendship with him, I was like, dude, can you give me your secret to writing? Because I cannot believe how much you just get into it right away. Like,
I haven't written anything because I'm listening to how fast you're writing.
I'm just blown. And then he goes, oh... I hit the keys for the first 5 minutes just to loosen up my muscles.
Nice.
Then I delete it all.
Then he deletes it all, and then he starts thinking and writing. And I'm really like, son of a... But anyway, but going back to intentionality, like, you guys have pushed a lot more. I was like, oh, you know, be intentional. If you're going to do something, then either do it, or just say, "Don't you're not going to do it." Like, don't say, oh, I've been meaning to get into this. I've been into that. So that's another fruit of our friendship that I'm... Because I don't know. That again, going back to the language of virtues, you don't hear that much on the mainstream, right? You're only hearing from the friends. So,
what one time of the year that I think we all like really come together, and I think also it has to do with just the things in which we have to do to get it done, is right before the camp out, right? Because the camp out is a time... The week before the camp out is really tough on all of us.
Yeah, because you can't prepare. You can, like, do a little bit of planning.
Right.
But, like, so much of it, you just have to wait to do right before, like, buying the food, packing the stuff, you know?
And so, like, the camp out bears much fruit. But beforehand, it's pretty tough. In fact... Typically what happens is Dave, Juan, and I are all very exhausted before we get there.
Yeah, because, I mean, we're also trying to take care of our houses, get them ready. And
so, like, Juan, what is your, like, I'm just curious from your angle, because you've played such a pivotal role in the camp out.
Thank you.
Over the course of, I think this is year eight for the camp out, official year eight for the camp out. What is your thoughts on the camp out? What does it mean to you? Because a lot of what we've done on the camp out has been your ideas. And so, like, I'm just curious on, like, what your thoughts are there.
Well, I will...
And for those who don't know, because we have new listeners every week, maybe...
That's what I was going to say. Maybe we should mention some of the glorious things that have happened.
What is the camp out? It's the this year, it's the last weekend in September. It's like September 26th through... The 29th.
Oh, I think I'm busy that weekend.
Yeah.
No, so the camp out is this opportunity that we have in a Benedictine monastery here, Clear Creek Abbey. And we go. We camp for 3 days, 4 days, and everybody comes, and it's kind of like an opportunity to have liturgical life and camaraderie and delicious food. You know, it's not like a guided retreat. It's not like a conference, even though we do have usually some edifying words from a monk there. But it's this opportunity that what you guys said earlier, where it's like, oh, I wish I had that. You know, it's incredible to see how fast the barriers go down in the camp out. Like within the first 20 minutes, you see people out there just like, yeah, I'm here. I drove 4 hours to be among a group of guys that I've never shook hands with.
Yeah, or talked to or know anything about.
Or anything
yeah.
about. And then within like 45 minutes, everybody's got a beer in their hand and they're laughing like they were the best of friends. And I think that it's part of that intentional pursuit that you have when you surround yourself around people that are running towards the same goal. So it's bearing, it's probably of all my, you know, the producing and being here with you guys is edifying. Sometimes it wasn't very fun because I wanted to like, it's hard to like see your best buds, talk about something you love about drinking and not talk, you know, especially for somebody like me. But God, I love those campouts. Like, it showed me in a way, actually, it showed me something that like, how some people think of like, oh, like a marathon, that you're like, it pushes your boundaries. It totally, like the first 2 years, it pushed the boundaries of what I thought I could do when I was like tired. And I still talk to people and be kind and be happy. And I was just like, man, I am literally exhausted right now. Mm-hmm. Like I just finished cleaning this last dish and I have to go prep for the next meal. Mm-hmm. So,
I'm really sorry about that, by the way.
No.
Or like,
I was the one that volunteered.
Or like midnight meat, what is it?
Midnight. So on Friday at midnight, we usually serve delicious food, delicious meat to break the fast from meat. And so again, it was just one of those ideas that came because I knew, I thought about it, it's like.
Yeah, so like Juan's over like cooking like steaks and ribs.
Tri-tips.
Tri-tips.
Exactly. Oh, like so midnight on Friday because it's Saturday now, baby.
But then again, that shows, again, intentionality. It's like, yep, you know what? It's not Friday anymore. I did something. I observed it. I was obedient. Good. Well, that's gone. That's gone. So we are going to enjoy.
It's also really just good.
But then again, I've really loved to see those one-off experiences of people that
well, you've
you
developed
tell.
Friendships for like.
Yes.
I mean, you
oh,
went
yeah,
and stayed.
We all have.
Well, yeah, obviously. But, I mean, you specifically went and stayed at somebody's house that you met from the camp
multiple out. Times.
Yeah.
Yeah, more than once.
Yeah,
more than once. Yeah, I would love to when I travel for work. It's like back when I used to be a part of the Facebook group, I'll be like, "Hey, I'm gonna be in this city. Who wants to come grab a drink?" Sometimes somebody would show up. Sometimes 4 people would show up. It was just beautiful. But like, I'll share one story about the camp out, which is my favorite. Story is
this is the skipping rock. This is the skipping
no,
rock.
No, no, that should be my favorite story about myself. Okay, I'm gonna share it about somebody else.
That was amazing when you skip when the people who don't know what we're talking about. It's gonna be hard for them. It's like when you skipped that rock, I thought, like, maybe this is the end of the world.
If the river hadn't bent, that rock would still be skipping. If the river hadn't
it, like, I thought, like, the laws of physics are changing. Maybe, like, here he comes. Mm-hmm. Where is he? Mm-hmm.
And you know what I did right before I threw that stone? I said a prayer to the Holy Spirit. I kid you not. I was just like, Holy Spirit, be with me. And I threw that rock just to prove that, you know, all things are possible in Christ who strengthened me. But the story that I was going to share.
I couldn't believe it. It was amazing.
Yeah, so this is what just
Adam,
finish,
you should have been there. It
just to wrap
incredible.
Up this, just to wrap up this story, there's a big, probably like a, I don't know, like a 12-inch rock that I grabbed and I tried to.
We are telling the rock skipping story now.
Yeah, I mean, we got into it. Might as well finish it.
I agree.
Put a bow on it.
We have to start off with the fact that everybody else, we had all tried to skip the rock.
Well, no, I was the first one. I grabbed it and I tried it and it failed. And then everybody tried to skip the rock.
And when I watched you do it, like when I was watching you do that stupid wind up.
Well, that was the second time.
I know. But the even then, I thought like, Juan,
he was because the such first time, an idiot. The first time I wasn't serious about it. I just grabbed it. But this time I was like, okay, I'm going to give it my all. And I grabbed all my applied physics because I'm an engineer. And I said, how can I grab this rock the best? How can I do this?
The Holy Spirit always works better through engineers.
Yes. And then I was like, okay.
So in Spanish.
Especially if they're Spanish. Yeah.
I stretched my back a little bit. And then I just launched into like a, probably like a 30-foot skip. And this stone just pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa. And everybody was quiet for like what felt like an hour.
I don't think we were quiet. I think we were all like going, oh my God!
Yeah. Well, they were quiet for like a second. And then they scream. Because
it just kept going and going.
Yes.
And going. And I remember when I tried to skip the same rock. And it was so big, it was easy for us to find it. Like, it's like, oh, right there in the creek. I thought, I'm totally going to skip this thing. Like, you guys, like, look, I'm athletic. I'm going to skip this rock, okay? I can skip a rock. And it totally twisted in my hand. And just flopped into the water.
Yeah. What was the other story you were going to tell, though?
Oh, about Jose.
I was also going to talk about, like, do you guys remember when Jose got there?
But so I was actually there when he got down from his car. And
like, before he did all the stuff?
After. See, he came back that night.
Yeah.
And he came back in the middle of the night. So I see a car pull over. I go welcome him. And he gets down from the car. And then we're talking, and then
like collapses.
He opens his trunk to get his bag, and then as he's looking at me, he looks up, and he gets quiet, and he just starts looking around, and he starts spinning circles, and he's like a little bit dizzy, and I'm like, Jose, ¿qué pasa? Because he is Spanish. No, he doesn't. He's Mexican. He spoke Spanish. Like, ¿qué pasa? And he said, man, nunca. He said, I haven't seen stars. In maybe 10 years. Because that's how long he had lived in the heart of Chicago. He said, I just hadn't seen them. And it was like see somebody being completely dumbfounded by just God's creation, you know, at the monastery. He took his breath away and was like, well, yeah, but here's what we're about, encountering God in nature. And I was like, yeah. And then he goes on to tell the story that he came that day, that weekend, there were two events. One was a Catholic Mission campout. The other one was a pilgrimage. How long did they walk?
It was like 35 miles.
35 miles.
So he gets early.
It was from the monastery all the way to like Tahlequah.
So his Spanish was, his English was muy mal. So he, as directions.
That means very bad for those people who aren't like me.
I think they got it. But but they, so he talks about it. Yeah, he walked for like 40 miles of a group of men, and he's like, halfway through the walk, he goes, I can't wait to start the whiskey tasting tonight. And some of the guys in the pilgrimage is just like...
Yeah, but they weren't just walking. So he showed up and like went up and asked somebody, I'm here for the men's retreat. And they pointed, it's like, oh yeah, they're gathering over there. So he just walks over there with these guys because he was showing up by himself. His wife told him, like, look, you should go.
Yeah.
You need to go. You need this.
This would be good for you.
And so he just got it like in his car from Chicago and drove down to Oklahoma to show up for the camp out. And then someone's like, oh, yeah, they're meeting over there. That's where the retreat is. Except it was not us. It was this other group of people who were actually carrying a cross. A life-size cross from... the monastery to Tahlequah, which is 35 miles.
Yeah.
And they were all like taking turns, you know, like a mile or two at a stretch.
He goes back to his mom, I'm never listening to you again.
To carrying a real cross.
So halfway through the cross, he goes, I can't wait for a whiskey tasting tonight. And they're like, what are you talking about? Yeah, the whiskey, the cigar, isn't that? And it's like, we don't have whiskey. And then he realizes like,
I'm
not in the right place. But by this point, he was halfway through the walk.
He's 15 miles away.
So he's not going to walk. So he just finished the walk.
Well, they also said like, oh, we can like have someone drive you back. And he's like, no, I'm in. Like, he was like, at this point, like, this is where the Lord wanted me to be. I'm going to carry this cross to wherever the heck we're going. I don't know. Because he doesn't know what Tahlequah is, you know. Is it over the hill? It's like, oh, no, bro.
No, bro.
It's a long way. Because it was like two days. Because it was on Thursday.
Yeah.
He did that on Thursday and Friday. And on Saturday morning is when he showed up.
Yeah.
And we had been wondering, like, where's Jose? Like, because we knew, oh, there's this guy, Jose, who showed up. And, you know, we were doing a head count, make sure is everyone here? It's like, well, I don't know. Maybe he just decided not to come. And we just thought, like, oh, he didn't come.
Right.
And then on Saturday morning, or whenever it was, maybe it was Friday night. Yeah, because they were done on Friday. He showed up, and that's when we all found out about Jose.
But, yeah, that and just so many, like, times around the fire where you're just sitting there, sipping a dram, talking. You know, a lot
Jumping over it.
A lot of, yes.
In a onesie.
Mm. In a onesie.
A Captain America or Spider-Man onesie.
Or Batman.
Or Batman.
Or Mandalorian.
How many onesies do you have?
Cuatro.
That's four for people who don't speak Spanish.
Mm-hmm. No, five, actually.
Cinco.
But yeah, that was like...
K-est.
Like, just to... But as I was saying, like, that really showed me, like, you know what? Sometimes I am too whiny with myself. I say, I am so tired. Because those days, I was telling myself, you know what? I'm exhausted. Like, especially when I never cooked for that many people at the same time over a, you know, charcoal fire. It's just like the
smoke. It's not like a kitchen.
I remember holding my breath for like a minute at a time to just stir the eggs and stuff like that to get breakfast going in the morning. So I was like, man, I was running on Holy Spirit juice for like the second half of the campouts. And then sometimes being at home, like, why am I being whiny about this one thing? Like, I know I can do this and way, way more. So it's just beautiful to have something like, I know I can do better, like I did this one time. Mm. Where you see you had a run, like I said, I haven't run a marathon, but that's kind of like when you said, oh, he hit the wall and he kept going. It's like, so many times I was like, getting up early in the morning, I was like, yeah, I'm going to totally get out of bed and go pray. And then I don't get out of bed. But then I think of that moment of courage. It's like, no, this is hard, but I can still do it because I've already done this. So having the opportunity to do it with you guys has just been beautiful.
Yeah, for people who have not been to the campout, you really got to try to come. I mean, because we really have developed meaningful relationships and friendships with people who live in other parts of the country. So obviously we don't get to spend time with them throughout the year. But I always look forward to the campout when we get to see them again and catch up. And I've never met their wives or their family, but I feel like I know them. Mm-hmm. You know, just
well. And it's awesome to see when they come, like father and son. Oh.
Yeah,
man, it's just like I wish I was this 60-year-old guy with his son in a Catholic mission.
We even had a guy, you know, who showed up one year, and you know, he was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and you know, showed up with his son-in-law. You know, the son-in-law kind of convinced
brought him along.
And he was very weird. Like, he didn't really want to go at first. And it turned out to be, like, mean the world to him to be there. Like, he even was wearing a Catholic Mancho cap.
He was buried in a Catholic Mancho hat.
You know, and, you know, when he left... the camp out that year, we knew, like...
He told us, like... And we've had other guys who, at the camp out, can, like, kind of confess to everybody that, like, that it's changed their life. And mm-hmm. that, like, they're gonna... That they came unsure and blah, blah, blah. And we don't try to bill it as something that's gonna change your life.
No.
This is just about coming and being with other men.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it gives you a foretaste of what can
good
happen.
In it. Yeah.
Yeah. It gives you a foretaste of like what can happen.
Right.
Like, look, if I have these minimal friendships, not only in a campout, but throughout my life, if I have beautiful liturgy, not only in a campout, but throughout my life, if I eat delicious food,
Yeah.
There's just these beautiful, these sparks of joy, of beauty that sometimes you realize, it's like, whoa, yeah, this is a camp. This is one time a week, but if I were intentional about my life and I get my stuff together, it doesn't have to be once a year. I can do this more often.
Yeah. So come, I'll beat you in chess. Mm-hmm. You can come and
I'll beat you in cornhole.
Yeah.
And we'll call it good. Juan, I'm curious on letting you ask questions, if you have any questions. You've sat here in the producer chair for years listening to us ask questions about, you know, to other people. I'm curious if you have, this is, again, probably something I should have said before we started, like, hey, I'm going to give you the opportunity to ask questions, but I didn't. And maybe you want to punt and wait for a little bit.
I know his first two questions.
Perfect.
Who do you think you are? What gives you the right?
What is the better language?
Latin.
I'll take that. I don't know. Questions? No. Let's punt it in a little bit. The Holy Spirit will come to me.
Okay. That's good.
You can ask me anything. As long as it's not about myself. I'm very good at this game. Just think about it.
I'll think about it.
Who's your favorite person that's that has been on the Catholic Man Show? Like, favorite guest?
Well, I can't tell you my favorite moment that I was sitting in that chair, and I still remember this. We're actually just making reference to it earlier today. It was like less than 20 episodes into it, and we have Tim Staples, the man in the show. And I think it was like one of the very first time we had a big-time guest. And I remember thinking like, man, this is just great. And hear him just like sparing all his knowledge about Mary and this and that. And I'm just like...
Yeah, because he was his book,
Behold Your Mother.
Behold Your Mother had come out recently, yeah, at the time. Great book.
And then he's talking
about... I was looking at it today.
He's talking about Mary and the suffering in the cross and this and that. And Adam goes, yeah, the suffering, it was just unbearable. It's kind of like when you have a piece of candy. Like, look, here's the chocolate, but you can't have it. And I remember... kind of like crumbling inside. It's like, that may be the stupidest analogy I have heard.
Dude, I've had way stupider
in my entire life. Well, no, that was at that point.
The thing was, I think you went back to candy again.
Yes, I did.
Yes. Because it was like, and then we were like, I'm not sure why I keep making all these candy references. Which we laughed about because, like, you don't even like candy. Like, if anybody's going to make a candy reference, it's me. Yeah. It should be me.
Yeah.
Like, everybody knows I'm the candy whore on the show, okay?
I guess I was just nervous. I don't know.
Yeah. But so that was my favorite moment with a guest. I think my favorite...
Me looking like an idiot.
You're welcome.
Yes. Okay. Very good.
Share his touch forever. I actually, sometimes I go back and I find the episode and I listen to it because I have the ability to.
That is hilarious.
But my favorite guest, in as much as like the
it's
one
his,
that has...
It's his ringtone. He made it his...
I get a text. I should make it like when I get a text from Adam, that beat plays.
You should do it.
You should definitely do that.
Yeah. But my favorite guest, in as much as like, he has somebody that shaped my life differently, is being Father Darren Calloway. Even though I wasn't here when they was recording, but that friendship, and then when we went to Wichita, we already knew him. I got to shake his hand and just talked. And I just, if you have not heard Father Calloway's conversion story, testimony, that's the word, testimony, it will blow your socks off. I remember crying, just crying when you were talking about interviewing him, found his deal. I was just
like with boogers coming out of your nose?
Yes. Yes.
There is no word in Spanish for sobbing. They literally just say crying with boogers coming out of your nose. They say the whole phrase,
yeah,
crying with boogers coming out of your nose, because they don't have the word sobbing.
No, because we save the best words for more important things.
Why are you sobbing? If it's not so important, why are you sobbing? Seems pretty important.
Yeah, no, but I was reading this Meditations by San Jose Maria Escriva on the rosaries.
And this is the sobbing story.
Yeah, this is the sobbing story. So I'm like...
I thought you were telling a Father Donald Calloway story.
Oh, no, no. I was just wanting to give some context for that. But
for the sobbing?
For the sobbing.
Okay. You talk, but like, this is the time when you and I were praying the rosary on our way.
Yeah. And then San Jose Maria Escriba has this bit where he has his whole rosary meditations where he plays himself historically where he's at. And then he, this is the mystery of the child being lost. In the, so it's like, Mary and Joseph are really worried, and he himself, he's like crying in the back. But as I'm reading it in Spanish, I'm like translating in live.
I asked him, I said, well, just translate it for me. You know, read it and tell me what it says. So he's like translating it on the fly.
So he says, San Jose Maria is like, well, Mary and Joseph are worried out of their, are very worried, walking everywhere. And as for me, I'm just crying with boogers coming out of my nose.
And
because he says literally llorando a moco tendido, which is like, it's like boogers like covering your nose like everywhere.
And up to this point, like it was, I mean, it really was an amazing, like it's very good.
Very
and,
touching.
And I was like really into it. Like we're praying the rosary and there's this meditation before each decade. And I'm just like, oh gosh. Yeah. Like I had never thought about some of these, like, you know, really putting myself on the scene this way. And then he's like, and then Mary, and I was just crying with boogers coming out of my nose. And he like keeps going as if like he didn't just say what he just said. And I was like, whoa, hang on a second. Because I was like totally out of it all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And I was like, no. Because I understand like you're translating it. Back up a second.
Yeah.
Did it actually say that? And he's like, yeah, that's what it says. And I was like, why are you pretending like that's just like, of course that's what it's, why are you being that way? He's like, what's? And like, he looked at me, he's like, oh, well, we don't have a word for, and I said like, sobbing? He's like, yeah, we don't have that word. We don't have that word. And I was like, what?
You should try it.
How about el sobbing?
Yeah.
El sabo. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that was just, again, one of those moments that, look back with fondness and just like
el sabo mucho.
And I think we were coming back from the monastery. If I'm not, if
I was
I'm
trying to remember where we were going. I think you're right.
Yeah. The monastery just
camp out strikes again.
Such a dear place in my life. Like sometimes I really wish I would win the lottery. I'm like, God, I will finish that church.
Say, my next question is, who do you like more, me or Adam?
It depends on the context.
For everything.
Like if I was to wrestle somebody, I would wrestle Adam. Any day, anytime.
Wait. What? So do you think you stand a better chance at winning if you wrestle Adam?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Remember how we talked about how like sometimes judgments aren't always like the best
your thing?
I haven't grown all that much.
Because I'm going to say something I know I've said to you at least 100 times. Adam wrestled in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't. I don't know anything about wrestling.
But
I'm just going to like struggle around on the ground, okay?
Because he's wrestled, he won't see, he is like undercutting me, so he won't see it coming when I like go and take him down.
You know who else wouldn't? Me. Because I definitely...
No, because my point is that he would be like a little bit prideful, like, oh, this is going to be easy peasy. Like you would think like, okay, I'm going to have to give you my all. I'm just like, all right, here we go, play time. And that's when I take him.
Can I tell you something else? I also think I would beat you. Easy peasy.
Yeah, but not as much as he thinks he can beat me.
So, one day...
Especially because I thought about this. I would cover myself in oil, and he wouldn't not be covering oil.
See, that's where it gets weird. This is because like this is something that you've said many times.
Mm-hmm. Once, I...
Let me ask you this one.
Actually, David talked me out of it. We were at a party, and I was going to go to a room, take my clothes off, put a swimsuit, and then cover myself in oil and challenge you.
You're welcome, bro.
And David said, no.
He said, don't do it. There are kids here.
Thanks, bro. On so many levels, thank you. And I can't believe
because I know you wouldn't have done it, and you'd have looked like a coward.
Yeah.
Just like the whiskey today, I just don't hold back.
Let me ask you this, Juan. Would you be willing to wrestle Adam without covering yourself in oil?
No.
So
that'll be my secret. That's the
so it's like Greco, old school Greco Roman.
Yes.
Make it or break it. Mm-hmm. Like it's a deal breaker. Without the baby oil all over yourself,
I wouldn't stand a chance.
You're right. But
you're okay. Also wrong.
Adam, are you willing to accept
no,
these terms?
This is what ridiculous.
What if Adam, are you willing to accept one if Adam is also covered in baby oil?
Yes.
No, I'm out. Yes. I'm out.
Adam?
I'm out.
Would you do it as a fundraiser?
No one wants
He's
to pay for that.
He's a fundraiser.
I don't want to pay. It's for the children.
Yeah, no. Next question.
It's to fund. It's to pay for the new studio.
Yeah.
And then, so I would choose Adam for a resident. And you, like, if we were to have a homestead, I would definitely want to be your neighbor. Because, yes.
Yeah, but Adam has no experience. And, okay, that was another question that was I was going to ask you. I wanted to talk to you about on our show today. So you are now, you're out on some land.
Landlord, yes. Land baron. That's what I was trying to say.
Baron,
yes.
Very good. I wanted to just see, what's your vision? Like, what is it that you're hoping to do? What are your goals for out on the land?
Well, fortunately,
you've got chickens.
I got chicks.
Some chicks.
We lost. Unfortunately, we lost the first chick this last weekend.
Mm.
So I came back from camping, and
the thing about chickens is that they die.
They die.
So we came back from camping, and out in the prairie, I saw a dead bird. It wasn't one of my chicks, but we've been reading a lot of Greek.
Like a bird sign. And like I was just from the gods.
This is an omen. I said, you know what? I don't know of what, but I have a feeling that this is an omen.
You're such a pagan.
Yeah, that's
pagan. Then
pagan mentality.
John Paul comes back. He went to check on the chickens. He comes back and is like, what is laying down with his eyes closed? And I said, alas! The gods have taken
Did you say alas?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't know if you were invoking Allah there for a second. You said alas.
No, I said alas.
Okay.
And then, yeah. I told him, John Paul, that chicken is not asleep. That chick is not asleep. It's probably...
It's the deadest chicken you've ever seen.
Probably dead. So...
What'd you do with it?
Buried it. Mm. But we're going to bury it. Not yet. We're deciding what to do with it.
Burying it is such a, like, newbie homesteader thing to do.
Well, I'm thinking about nutrients.
You fling it out into the pasture.
No, I was talking about nutrients, right? It's like something dies... It's kind of like a circle of life. It becomes a nutrient.
Dead bodies are not good for your soil. Because they have bad, like rotting flesh is not a good bacteria for the soil. So you just fling it out there. Birds will come and eat it, or a coyote, or a fox, or a possum, or a skunk.
What else?
Or something. Adam doesn't like this.
I really want to have an orchard.
Okay.
Yes. Just we're talking about community. I dream of having an orchard and having like a festival picking, where it's like, hey, anybody come take as much fruit as you want, because again, I don't hold back. So I'm gonna have like 15 apple trees, 12 pecan trees,
like just an obscene amount of each one.
Yes, because I thought like,
so like in 40 years, you guys should come over.
Yeah.
Yes.
In well, 10.
Like when I was getting this land, I know they didn't have any trees, and I said, like, you know what? I'm going to develop the land that I wish I had, and I'm just going to give it to my children. Like, I'm going to give them the experience that I wish I had right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so orchard, chickens, and then I want to have pigs. I think I'm going to give a hand of having like a little craft butchery, like, hey, butcher some pigs.
Sell them
by the cuts.
It's like definitely
pork
a, skill,
chops,
a good
these,
skill
that.
Of yours, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really enjoyed butchering. Which, like, it's funny, at work I tell these stories about how much I enjoy butchering, and some people are, like, vegan and stuff like that, and I got in trouble once in a Zoom call because I gave way too many details about how the lamb looks you in the eyes as I am slaughtering, and, I got an HR call for that, but it is what it is.
How many HR calls have you gotten?
Next question.
Pass.
that is a funny story.
But so I
can picture you doing that exact. Yeah. Anyway, I appreciate that.
I will say one more quick HR story because it's my favorite one. So I was doing a survey. Like, my boss was like, you know, we have all these technicians in the call. Write some fun surveys to like engage them, right? So he's like, yeah, okay. So at the beginning of the call, he's like, here's a online survey, go click it and then share your answers. So in one of the questions, you know, first it was just like, what team, football, that kind of stuff. Then hunting season came. I was like, oh, I bet you a lot of people are hunters. So I was like, okay, what's your go-to hunting? So I put option A, rifle. B, bow. C, crossbow. D, I don't hunt because I'm not a real man. That got me in trouble. That, unfortunately, also got me an HR call. Mm.
But yet true.
Mm-hmm. And, well, it's not actually true, but people these days, they just can't take a joke.
No.
It's too bad.
So if I were to ask a question about you guys and the show, it would just be like, I remember whenever we started the show, whenever you guys started it, you started the show, and I remember hearing you guys like, yeah, like, you know, if we have like a couple hundred listeners in 6 months, we would have continued doing it. Like, okay, we've seen this taking, doing something, so we wouldn't stop. So I remember that being like your first goal, or like your first, I don't know, not goal, but like measure of health. But then, like, I guess going forward, like, how would you consider, guys, this is driving me to continue doing it? Because I think that over time, you will realize it's like, you know what? It's not about the listeners. It's about how you guys enjoy doing this and how much there's fruits. But I don't know. What would you say your next milestone is to say, like, you know, if this is happening, I'm going to keep doing it.
You want me to go? Dave and I have different perspectives on this. And so I like it's also helped me grow because he and I don't think the same way in business, like, a lot of times. And so it's also given me different perspectives on, like, what this should be, like, or, you know, what it could be. I would say at this point, I have zero care about the listenership.
Mm. Not because you don't care.
Not because I don't care. Like,
but it's just not the way you're interested in measuring. Is that right?
Yeah, that's not a KPI.
It's not a KPI. It's not that I don't care. Like, I hope that people listen because, like, it's taking time out of, like...
Because if nobody's listening, we're not going to keep doing it.
I don't know.
I mean, like, we're not going to sit here in front of microphones.
The reason why I do it now is because... So we've had 8 years of doing this, right? And the motives have changed from my perspective a lot, because originally it was like, this is an opportunity, and this is like something that's really growing, and this is something like, okay, this is something that we're all doing together. Like, there's been a lot of different variables. At this point, though, what makes the show for me is that it gives us an intentionality to be together. Mm. I just know, based off of like how busy everybody's life is, and like, you know, what we have to do as men, you know, as fathers and husbands, and like all the things that we have going on in our lives, that we don't, you don't carve out the time to do so, to be with, you know, some of your best friends every week.
Yeah.
And so what this show does for me is that, one, it keeps me accountable to continue growing in my faith, because as we talk about things, obviously you have to study things to be able to talk mm-hmm. about things. Yeah. Right. You have to continue reading, and you have to hold yourself accountable to be reading things that you have to be talking about, and have, you know, at least a sense and understanding of what you want to talk about.
Yeah, there's only so many books that Joseph Pieper can write. So
right, exactly. And he passed away. Books, God rest his soul. And, you know, so he hasn't written any books since. You know,
but he might.
But maybe. I don't
know. Actually, people, authors are actually published from the grave.
Yeah, you know, find, it's like, yeah.
people will find some things they've written and publish them.
So the show at this point for me is twofold. One, it keeps me focused on continue learning more about our faith. But the second thing is like it gives me the opportunity to hang out with you guys every week. Originally, that was not like the goal. Like obviously, that was like a huge benefit. Like, it's like, oh great, this is like fun. Like we get to do this together. But I had much more. Stronger opinions on goals and KPIs because I'm more of a, like, my mindset goes that way. Yeah. In fact, there's probably something to be said about, like, our listenership has actually kind of plateaued since I've taken that mentality.
Yeah.
Because I'm not doing things that I was doing to continue moving the show forward, to grow it, to feed the monster that it, you know, that you have to feed to continue growing.
Feed the algorithms.
Because
I remember you guys, initially, this was meant to fill a gap. Like, hey, we have a radio station.
Yeah.
There's not much of a main deal. We're going to do it. And then I think that what you're saying is beautiful in as much as like, we're trying to fill a gap and we're trying to find ways to fill this gap. But then we realize it's like, hey, we just fill this gap with being genuine about being holy and having friendship and developing love for the liturgy. Like you were trying to fill a gap, and then you realize it's like
I was more motivated though, especially at the beginning, with goals. To be honest, like that was my like. That's also how I get I get motivated to do things.
Yeah, it's your personality.
It's my personality.
I get motivated with food. You have goals.
Like I want to see like how do I get to that next level?
Yeah.
And we were doing it. You know, for a while there, we were just continually growing and continually moving forward and continue like, you know, the numbers kept growing.
Yeah. It's like that one time they were like, somebody's running us from Ireland.
Right. Yeah. It's like
or like it was Japan.
Really, it was really wild.
Well, I remember the first time someone was from Maryland or Baltimore or Boston.
Yeah, Boston. I think that's right. Yeah,
I still remember it was Andrew DeJoseph.
Yeah. Andrew DeJoseph.
But like that was my initial, you know, that was kind of my motivation for quite a while was just from a business like perspective, how do I grow this? Now I just don't even think about that.
Yeah. David. So my motivation would be, and I know Adam would share this with me. He didn't say this just because it's kind of the obvious, but like I do the show because I feel like it is the Lord's will for me to do it. And I know Adam, that's Adam's motivation too. And he's right. We both have always kind of measured success differently. There's a lot of people who have told us, and I have pondered this, and I just disagree, and I'm probably wrong. But I can only believe what I'm only as good as my own reason, which is fallible, but I have to stick with it. Some people have told us that, no, you need to grow this ministry and just continue growth because. And I just don't believe that. I want the Catholic Man Show to reach as many people as the Lord wills for it to reach. I want it to reach everybody. I don't want to leave anybody out, not a single soul. But I don't think that, I think ministries do themselves an injustice sometimes by taking on a business-like mentality of growth for growth's sake.
Yeah.
And I think that we need to take more of a St. Therese approach of some things are meant to be small. And the Catholic Man Show is not a small endeavor, and our reach is not small. But that doesn't mean that we need to have a million listeners just because, like, oh, well, if we spent more money, if we did these things, we could get a million listeners, right? And I'm not opposed to growing the audience at all. That's not at all my attitude. But I don't think that we need to get bigger just because. In my opinion, if we sit here and we do a good podcast, the Lord will provide. And we need, I don't want people to misunderstand me. because obviously the Lord, we need to be good cooperators, right? And the Lord is not going to just like take over and do things. Sometimes the Lord does, but in general, he will cooperate with what you're willing to help him with, right?
Yeah.
So obviously, if we want things to be successful, we need to be willing to put in the work and do the things to make them successful. And I think that we are doing those things. But there comes a point where it's like, okay, well, you could work harder. You could, you know, like, because Adam and I both have families. We both have jobs, just like you, Juan.
Jays.
Right? And so this is not our job. If this was our primary job, things would be a lot different. And obviously my attitude towards the show would be a lot different. This is a ministry, and I pour my heart into it, just like all of us do. Even Jim over there guarding the door. And so I want it to be as successful as possible, but I don't think it should, I don't strive for success at all costs. And I do think that the Lord has a very specific scope for the success of all activities. And I want to fill that scope completely,
as you can.
Completely and nothing else. I want to be no less and no more successful than the Lord's plan for my life.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, it's hard to say, how am I doing?
Well, and
I don't know, but that is what I strive for. To me, success can only be measured in the how well I am like living out God's will in my life.
It's a tough call because, which is kind of, I guess, my call, the call that I made when I kind of like slowly moved away and it's like, hey, any minute you're in the studio, it's a minute that you're not with your family. It's a minute that you're not mm-hmm. with your kids. It's a minute that you're not doing the dishes. You know, like, I remember once coming over a little bit earlier and I kind of like, a long time ago, and Haley realizes like, oh, it's recording night. I guess she just, mm-hmm. it kind of like hit her that, you know what, my husband is going to be gone for the next hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing that moment of like, a little bit despair.
Disappointment. Yeah.
Demise is what I'm looking for.
Demise.
No, that's not the word
you're looking for. You keep using that word. You're not thinking it means what you think it means.
And I remember thinking like, oh, like, wow, this is actually a sacrifice for Adam. And then like 18 years later, I realized like, you know what? Think that it might also be a sacrifice for Joan. And guess what? Probably Pamelita. And I remember thinking like, man,
what did you just say?
Probably Pamelita. Lady Pamela.
Sorry, I had no idea what you said, so I knew that there's no way.
I am the only person in this existent earth that can have a nickname for Pamela.
That's no, probably true.
Nobody else has a nickname for her, only me.
That's what he decided.
But then that's where like the equation comes in. It's like, man, right now I'm having to drive like 35 minutes to come, 35 minutes back.
It's definitely
like,
different math now that you're not across the street.
You're not a mile away. Yeah.
So and I did not discern that lightly. Like I knew that I was just like, you know, if I move away, but then there's all these dreams we've had for so long. It's
totally.
Like, I ain't going to be decisive. But anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, we all felt like you made the right decision. Call. Yeah, I mean, you had to do best for your family. We're all very happy.
Next question.
You.
So there is a lot of different ologies out there. So you have
ologies?
Ologies.
Oh yeah, okay.
Let me finish the question.
I just want to make sure I understood what you said.
Ologies.
Yeah.
So you have like angiology, Mariology, mm-hmm. eschatology, you know, like all these different niche areas of theology, which is the original ology, that people can study. If you have to pick one mm-hmm. area mm-hmm. for the listeners today, be like, you know what, go learn about this one-ology, mm-hmm. miskatology, mm-hmm. epistemology. Mm-hmm. What ology would it be if you have to pick one?
Christology.
He beat you to the punch.
Pseudo-metaphysical epistemology.
Next question.
That was my question. Christology. What about you for real, though?
Theology.
I asked for a sub branch of theology.
Oh, you did?
Okay. So yeah. So what ology would it be?
Okay. Well, I thought theology was
theology because geology. I mean, you can do all certain ologies.
No, I'm asking
you, but you said a sub branch, like a sub virtue.
I didn't hear you say that. Okay,
I didn't hear you say that.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can't say theology.
Yeah. Philosophy.
But that's not an ology.
No, it's not an ology.
I'm sure there's like a different way to say philosophy.
Yeah.
But I thought philosophy was kind of on a natural level, right? Like all the things I'm asking for is a supernatural level. Like Mariology, eschatology, angiology, miscatology. You know, like on the supernatural realm, sometimes you have to, there's this niche area. So it's like, oh man, learn about angels and this and that. Like what's one thing?
Ology is just the study of things. The study of that.
But I'm asking, like, on a supernatural level, there's all these ologies. So you pick Christology.
Christology.
Study of Christ.
I think I would have to say, I mean, I might be able to come up with a better answer if you give me 10 minutes, but Christology has to be
the one. Because, like, every other thing points back to Christology. Mm-hmm. Mariology only is beautiful insofar as...
I think theology is a better answer because it's the study... Because Christology is encompassed and...
Well, I mean, theology is everything is divine,
right?
So I see all the ologies as like a sub.
Well, what about you? What's your answer?
I wasn't ready for that question. Even though I'm the one that made it.
What? You've sat in our chair, in your producer chair for like 7 years, listening to us like ask questions and give answers off the cuff, and you're like, oh, you should have said this. You should have said this. And it's like, one, we're giving you the opportunity to like. Question and answer.
Right. So here's what I would say. It's probably a sub-thing of Christology, but it's about the incarnation itself. Like, all the implications...
Incarnology.
That sounds like carnitas, though. It makes me hungry.
That's it. That's the one.
That's the one.
Carnitology.
My lower appetites are fulfilling the higher appetites.
That's not true. No, that's not what that is.
Guiding. What about guiding?
No.
No.
What about encompassing? I can come up
that's
with so many
worse.
Words. My vocabularistics are excellent.
If your lower appetites are encompassing your higher appetites,
you know what this is like? This is
good.
Like throwing up. It's like when things go the wrong way.
Yeah, you're going, you're reversed.
Anyway, so like I remember just being blown away by... the incarnation on like a natural level and then how that builds up on a supernatural level. Like all the things that had to happen. Like why did Jesus become man? Like the redemption of humankind is just one of those things. Mm. There's like five or six other arguments out there that's like, well, you know, humans can then become a man. Some humans can go to heaven. It's like, okay, it's not just a redemption, but it's like the ascension into heaven. Mm-hmm. And then there's like, well, whenever the angels fell, they left a gap in heaven. And then the humans that ascend into heaven give God some sort of worship that was right for him to have, to deserve in the compass of eternity. So now you have a gap that was left by the angels fallen that now mankind is fulfilling. Because there's like a balance of justice or something like that. Athanasius has his book on incarnation. Is it mm-hmm. Athanasius?
Saint Athanasius. Yes.
Athanasius, yes, Saint Athanasius.
On the incarnation.
Yeah, and then there's just so many things about like what does it mean to Jesus for it to suffer like a man? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, he was divine, but he has all these things that he actually was a man with hunger and then went on to do X, Y, and Z. So I would say the study of incarnation. Particularly.
Nice.
All right, this is my last question for you, Juan.
Okay.
If you could say, you know, like give one piece of advice or encouragement to men to get to heaven, like, you know, like making sure we're focusing on the essentials or whatever it is we want to say, what would be the one thing you would encourage people to think about, focus on, work harder on, stop doing? You decide.
Well, I think that as far as men, as it comes to what would I tell myself if I was a man out there, I'd say definitely think yourself as a husband before you think of yourself as a father. like that order in those vocations, it is so primordial. Like, I remember clearly.
I'm going to start saying that. Oh, gosh, this is just so primordial.
You get canceled so fast.
I was in a call one day, like a Zoom call, and everybody introduced themselves. Kind of like, oh, you know, 5-minute speech. Not 5 minutes, 5-second intro. And somebody said, before I'm a husband, I'm a father. And I love my kids, and I sacrifice for them, and this and that. And I remember just being...
like offended at the idea? Taken aback?
Taken aback, for sure. It's like, wow, like... I remember thinking, like, that sounds very noble on one front. Because here's this guy working and giving on everything. Because his kids are just
so... Well, there is something noble in being a father.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, his kids are just so depending upon him, right? So it's like, it's almost like on one side you see the sacrifice that he does to provide for his kids. Mm-hmm. In a different level, the sacrifice that he would do for his wife. And that sparked like a thought in me. It's like, man, what's going on with this? As we've talked about this, I realized like, hey, it is way easier to be a good father than a good husband. And now,
in some ways, that's true. In other ways, I don't know. It's strange to compare the two because they're so intermingled. You know, like fatherhood flows out of being the bridegroom, you know?
Kind of.
It's so they're like so overlapped and but what, here's wrapped the thing, up with
it's
each
like
other.
When you're a father, and I'm talking about small children in this point, right? It's like when you're a father and you have small children, it is easy to do the right things, expect the right outcome, and you have a lot more control about on that relationship. It's like, oh, if I can just do X, Y, and Z, clearly, if I can provide this, this, and this, then I'm a good father.
Yeah.
But when it comes to
it's easy
to
be a father when there's a mother in the situation.
Oh, yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Without the mother, it's like, oh, now it's not so easy.
That's a good caveat. But then it's like, it's a lot harder when you put the context of like men and women and all the complexities that are there and the levels that you have to sacrifice for your wife are much different than the level you have to sacrifice to provide for your kids.
Yeah, because your kids don't care if you use paper plates at every meal.
Do not.
They don't.
No. So I would say like, if you want to embrace your vocation, then be intentional about being that man that put his wife as number one, because that's the best example you can give to any kid is that, you know what, even though I'm one of six, I don't know which kid my dad loves best, but I can tell you that my mom was the person that my dad loved the most. Mm. And that's the best example you can give to them. Like if you are prioritizing all these, you know, sports and academics and above the love that you have for your wife, because you think that, oh, you know, if you sacrifice and I sacrifice, then like so much of this stuff can happen is because it's good for them. And then you're spreading yourself too thin versus like, hey, you and I are number one. We're going to take good care of them. We're going to come with a plan for them to be taken care of and challenge and this and that. But if you are my number one person, that's the best advice I can give someone.
I mean, it is true that if the best gift you can give your children, the best gift a man, a father can give his children is to love their mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Last question from you.
I was going to just open the floor to you to give you whatever you wanted to, you know, whatever.
This is your swan song.
Oh, my swan song. Mm. If only it was in Spanish, it would have been a way better swan song.
Mm-hmm. You know what? For once, I believe you.
Yeah.
Mostly because Spanish is better than English. Mm. And because I sound smarter in Spanish than English.
That's probably true. I think if I went and learned Spanish, I would always sound smarter in English.
No, well, if I were to say just some parting words for...
Like if you're going to die in the next 10 minutes.
I'm going to talk to you guys a lot more than I'm going to do to the audience. So I might as well address the audience at this point and all the listeners. And I would just say, you know, pursue the life of virtue. Know the virtues. Know the sub-virtues. Know what to pray specifically for by name. And then once you identify those gaps, it is so easy to point the finger in it. Like, one of my favorite things about learning about the virtues is that as a second, English as a second language, I am trying to eradicate the word good or bad. Like, good is such a vague word.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're a, this is what a good boy does. You know, when I'm disciplining my, my children, and this would not have happened if I wasn't for you guys. When I'm disciplining my children, or when I'm rewarding them, I never say, that's a good boy. I say, hey, that's a responsible boy.
Mm-hmm. That's an obedient boy.
That's an obedient boy.
Charitable or, yeah.
And it's the same thing for when you're going the other way. Hey, this is, what you're doing is not charitable. It's not that you're a bad boy. It's that
right.
You're lacking in this one virtue. Mm-hmm. And it's actually grown a lot to, both for my kids and for me, like when you go to confession. Like, hey, it's not that I've been a bad husband. It's that, hey, I've lacked in the virtue of patience. I've lacked temperance. So Santiago, when you go to confession, you need to say that you were being disobedient.
Yeah.
And that all of a sudden it just becomes this word that you can express and be intentional about. And guys out there, if you are intentional about growing in your holiness, holiness seems this like mountain that you want to climb. And each virtue is going to be a little step that you can do along the mountain. Like, you're going to think like, you know what? I cannot be holy all the time. But I could be courageous when I'm called to be courageous. I could be patient when I'm called to be patient. So stay in that journey. Be strong. Grow in virtue. We are on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
Cheers to Jesus.